Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Recently, the destruction of a unique Oregon treasure was threatened by wildfire. Brighton Bush Hot Springs Retreat and Conference Center was evacuated on August 30th, 2017 for nearly a month. But thanks to the tireless efforts of community firefighters and some well-timed rain, the fire never made it on to their 154 rugged and beautiful acres. Brighton Bush reopened to visitors on September 27th. The emphasis of the center is about service, service to the guests, to the members of the Brighton Bush Co-op, and to the greater global and universal community. Our guest today is Peter Moore, one of the founding members of the Brighton Bush community. He is currently business director of the Brighton Bush Co-op. He was born in Oregon City, graduated from San Francisco State, and traveled throughout Europe and Asia as a musician and wanderer seeker from 1973 through 1977. He was co-founder and managing editor of the Oregon indie zine, Alternatives Magazine. And he co-founded the International Holistic Centers Movement and currently serves on the boards of several nonprofits. Hello, Peter, and welcome to the Pathways Show.
I'm happy to be here.
It's always good to have you here, and we so appreciate Brighton Bush, not only as a unique resource, but as a veritable sponsor of KBOO pledge drives every now and then. So thank you very much for all that you guys do.
Well, KBOO is doing some of the same work that Brighton Bush is doing. You're doing it through the media, and you're reaching thousands of people, who knows how many, and we reach people too by them coming.
It's a beautiful alliance, and I was so distraught at the thought of any part of Brighton Bush burning down. Why don't you give our listeners your point of view on this fire that was so threatening this summer?
Well, fire is a natural part of the ecosystem. That's a good theory, and it's right, it's true. But to be in the face of a massive fire that is burning thousands of acres all around us, that's a visceral experience. This fire was lightning strikes. Started in July, there were more lightning strikes in August, and what's called fuel loading. I mean, it's been decades, maybe a century or more, since this area has burned massively. It burned massively, and in fact, a lot of Oregon burned at the same time. August into September of 2017 is the biggest burn year maybe in Oregon history, and we were in right in the zone of those fires. We had the Whitewater Fire burning up in the wilderness, the Little Devil Fire, which was another lightning strike just at the top of Devil's Peak, and it came down Devil's Ridge to us, and then there was Scorpion Fire. We were bounded by fire to the east of us and to the west of us, and those fires came to within about a mile or two of our borders, working downslope and around.
Now, there was an evacuation.
Yes.
That was called for by some government authority.
No. We evacuated well before the authorities called for a level 2 or a level 3 evacuation. We evacuated guests, not because of fire danger, but because of smoke and unhealthy air conditions.
But yet, 10 of you stayed on the property,
well, that's
including
true.
Yourself. Tell our audience what you did to try to... I mean, we didn't know it was going to rain.
No.
What a lucky break that was.
Oh, yeah. It goes beyond luck.
But you guys are out there in this smoke-filled environment.
Yeah.
And what are you doing?
Well, we're watching from the footbridge over the river. We're watching the fire burn down Devil's Ridge from Devil's Peak, which is about 4,500 feet, burn down towards our elevation, which is 2,300 feet. And so every night we would watch the flames moving inexorably down
towards you,
towards us,
right,
like slow motion lava. It was an amazing sight, and every once in a while it would run up a little ridge and you'd see trees exploding with flame, just boom, right in your eyesight, with flame lengths that would maybe go exceed the highest peak of the tree, maybe by 80 or 100 feet.
Wow.
So massive flame growth. And then the fire would die down, become a backing fire, and move down towards us. What we did was, okay, you look at that fire and you think, what's going to stop that fire? Well, moisture.
Yeah.
So we bought massive pumps. We put in miles of fire hose. We bought lots and lots and lots of sprinklers from everybody that sells sprinklers. And we put up hundreds of sprinkler sets around our buildings. We started with our critical buildings, the lodge, the powerhouse, and other critical buildings, our office. And then we went from there to our quote-unquote less critical buildings. They're all critical. You know, all of the
guest cabins. We just got like 100 cabins or something.
Yeah. We put sprinklers on all of them. We turned it into a rainforest. So you'd never have known in mid-September, if you walked through Breitenbusch, our little built environment there in the wilderness, you wouldn't know that it hadn't been raining for days, weeks. There was mist everywhere. We created a rainforest in our built environment.
Well, it's still a good thing that it was never put to the test. Fortunate break, because, I mean, just a few years ago, we had Harbin Hot Springs burned to the ground in Northern California, a similar kind of place is Breitenbusch, one of the international holistic centers.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about Breitenbusch for a second, because even though Harbin was similar in many respects, they had the hot springs and they had the healing retreats, etc.
Mm-hmm. Workshops, conferences.
Breitenbusch is so unique as a business entity, and I want to speak to that because, I mean, it's a uniquely socialistic enterprise this capitalistic society. So how is that?
We're organized as a worker-owned co-op. When we were first forming up, we thought about, well, we've got to have some sort of a corporate entity, you know, because everybody, that's just how business is done. That's how organizational capacities are created in our culture. And you've got to have the insurance of some sort of a corporate structure to be in business, because there are liabilities. We won't go into all that, but we chose a cooperative corporation model, subchapter T corporation under Oregon law, and so we all of the workers are also the co-owners of the business and work, you know, so we live out in the wilderness. We make our own electricity from the river. Our heat comes from the hot springs. We're off the grid. So if we don't do for ourselves, nobody does for us. We plow our own roads in the winter. We maintain, we're self-reliant. We have to be self-reliant community, and we have to do all of the job security. That's on us. We don't wait for the police, because there are no up there.
Right.
So organized as a worker-owned co-op, that means that all of the business decisions are made by the workers who live there. All of the neighbor, we're all neighbors in the same neighborhood. We're co-workers in the same work together, and we're co-owners of the same business all together. So we have these highly complex relationships, you might say.
Now, I've heard that the power structure is circular, not pyramidal.
Well, that is true. Sometimes, though, you get a slight pyramidal structure in some way. You've got to have a sense of humor to do Breitenbusch anyway. I'm the business director. That gives me certain, within the role, I have certain rights and responsibilities. I could even fire somebody for really screwing up. But when I go to that board of directors, and these are elected from the membership, these are elected from members of the maintenance team, the kitchen team, the office team, you'd think, well, those are my employees, you know, I have hiring authority with those people, but they're elected from the membership. They are my boss as in their role as members of the board of directors. So sometimes I'm their boss, sometimes they're my boss, so it's interactive in it, and it's it's interpenetrating. Vertically integrated, horizontally integrated. It would take longer than we have to really talk about it.
Right, right. This might be another show sometime, because it's fascinating how you guys came up with this, what were your models and all of that.
But yeah.
We got other things to talk about today, but I want to mention that you guys have a credo, the Brighton Bush Credo, and it's all about personal growth with a holistic approach. What does the term holistic mean?
Holistic, well, of course, that term can mean what the user of the term wants it to mean in certain ways. But that's language. Holistic, you could say it's contextual. It involves the whole person, not some compartmentalized or departmentalized component of personality or society, or it isn't a fraction of the human experience. It's talking about the whole human experience.
So you have events and workshops that address the body and the mind and the soul, or what?
If you look at human potential, mm-hmm. not human pathology. We learn all the time about human pathology. It's in the newspapers. We talk about it every day. What if it bleeds, it leads, you know, in the media, in
right.
conventional media.
Right.
Human potential and holistic work within that the movement of human potential is all about the possibility of being human, and human evolution is a part of that. Human biological evolution is what most people think of when we think of human evolution, but there is conscious evolution going on in the species, and that ain't stopped. That's going to continue as long as the species continues.
And that's what you're promoting overall.
Absolutely.
Conscious evolution.
Yes.
So this kind of leads us into the topic of the International Holistic Centers movement, of
yeah.
which Brighton Bush is a member.
Yeah.
And
what
I would say a shining example. But let's tell our listeners about this International Holistic Centers.
There are thousands of centers like Brighton Bush, and every one of them is a one-off. There's no franchise within the holistic centers that are around the world. And centers, I mean, if you're familiar with Esalen down in California, it started in 1962. Or Findhorn over in Scotland, it started also in 1962. There's Rancho La Puerta down in northern Mexico that started in 1940. You mentioned Harbin, Brighton Bush, Kalani Hanua on the Big Island, Omega in New York State, The Haven up in BC on Gabriola Island, and there are hundreds, and then when you research more deeply into it, thousands, and then when you research even more deeply into it worldwide, there are tens of thousands of centers all over Europe, all over Africa, throughout the UK, all over the United States, in Russia, in China now, even in Vietnam, Laos. Wherever you look, you will find these centers, and they are coming into being through the efforts of people who are locally based. It's people from an area will create such a center because it's part of, I think, you know, in my worldview, in my world, people are seeing the possibility of what it means to be human and what it means to go beyond this zero-sum game that is played economically and politically and so on, you know, by so many people. And just take a look at the political leaders or the corporate behaviors of organizations. A lot of people, you know, it's competition over cooperation. And that's not what this is about. This is about what we can do, how we can do that with beautiful organizational structures, truth-telling, love as a base. I mean, this sounds like, what is this? Some idealistic, crazy, you know, hippie thing. But, you know, it's actually very pragmatic idealism.
Well, speaking of cooperation over competition, some years ago, you and others like Ralph White of the Open Center started the International Holistic Centers Gathering.
That's correct. So 32
years ago. Which is to promote cooperation between these centers.
Yes.
Among other lofty global goals.
Yeah, right.
So let's talk about the International Holistic Centers
right,
Gathering.
That was the center of your
which
question.
Which I want to say with full disclosure to our audience, I have participated in a number of times.
Yeah.
Along with
it's
you and Ralph and others.
Every year there's a meeting, at least one meeting, of representatives of various centers. And each year it's at a different holistic center. This coming year, next May, May of 2018, there will be a meeting at Omega Center in upstate New York. Omega is an exceptional center, you know, amongst these centers. In 2008, 10 years ago or so, the meeting happened at Brighton Bush Hot Springs. Happens at all these various centers.
Every year it's at a different center.
Yes. And representatives come. And we talk about what it is to create, co-create, and maintain and work with the trends of these centers. And each one of these centers serves thousands of people. We have 25,000 or more people come through Brighton Bush every year. And we're just one little local center working in a tiny little place in Oregon. But when you have thousands or tens of thousands of centers worldwide, it's affecting human choices and human possibilities.
And do you see this as a movement that's growing?
Yeah, without being too hubristic about it, yes, I think that is true. I think human evolution, you know, it's not a short-term thing. 2,500 years ago, a lot of people were talking about the birth of the city-states, and all these city-states were vying for supremacy and whatever. I mean, you look at Greece, you look at, you know, at the creation of Western and Eastern culture. Well, back then, nobody was talking about nation-states, and yet we have nation-states now. That's been an evolutionary process over thousands of years. And now we have so much communication between people worldwide that eventually we're going to realize, guess what? We're all related, and we're a lot more similar than we are dissimilar as humans.
So the International Holistic Centers gathering,
yes,
has created a website.
Oh yeah,
where people can go and learn more about various different centers or the whole movement in general.
Centersgathering.org.
Centersgathering.org. I hope people write that down, because this is such an exciting movement. And I've noticed that every year, I haven't gone to them every single year, but I've gone to a few.
Yes.
And I noticed that every year there's new centers coming into the Centers Gathering.
Yes.
Which is like concrete evidence that this gathering itself is having an impact. And I think the centers in China are a recent example of that, who came to the Centers Gathering through an affiliation with The Haven,
yes,
which is a center up in British Columbia. And since then, the Chinese centers have actually hosted the Centers Gathering.
Yes, that's true.
And have put on conferences in affiliation with some of the centers.
That's true, too.
And are now actually donating to the Centers Gathering movement,
right,
and the website, which I find phenomenal. It's just incredible that it's happening in China at all.
True.
And that it's actually having this supportive outreach from China to the rest of the world. Tell us how.
Think about China. China has a one-party state system, the central authority, the Communist Party of China. China has a massive population, maybe 1.3, 1.4 billion people. China has a history of being exploited by interior warlords or exterior corporate and military forces. It's China, but China is on the move, and China is now a world-class economy, and is becoming a dominant economic, political, military, cultural force in the world, and they're claiming it. So within that, the Chinese Central Authority doesn't brook disloyalty to it. It doesn't want to have to compete for people's loyalty, either economically or politically anyway. But here are millions of people, maybe 11%, 12% of the Chinese population, which might translate to like 1.25 125 million people. That's a lot of people, even if it is a small fraction of the whole population, but it's a growing population. A middle class, the development of the Chinese middle class, people who have money, they have discretionary spending authority, they've got passports, they've got educational opportunities now, and that expanding demographic in Chinese population is to be watched. Now these people, they're as smart as any human beings on the planet Earth, because guess what? We're a unified human species. We may call ourselves Chinese or American or whatever, but we're all one in that regard. They're interested in things. The Chinese Central Authority doesn't like new political parties springing up. They don't like religious institutions that would draw the loyalty of the people away from what is happening in China, because it's a giant social experiment.
Well, and they also consider all religion to be superstition.
Yes, exactly. So then their educational ministry is looking around. What are the options we can offer our people, because things are changing in China? And they find, look at these holistic centers worldwide. Wow, they do not require these centers, Brighton Bush, Esalen, Omega, Findhorn, The Haven, Kalani Anua, and thousands of others, Zeg over there in Germany, Kitesh outside of Moscow in Russia, all of these centers. The centers do not request or require people to be loyal to the centers, like join the center. What you're there for is to become a better human being in whatever way that makes sense to you. This is holistic exploration, you know, through psychic exploration, spiritual exploration, physical exploration.
It's amazing how China is opening up.
Yes.
To its own, and including to its own spiritual tradition.
That is true.
At this last center's gathering, I gave a speech on the I Ching.
You did.
I'm a Western I Ching developer who's developed software and written a Western version of the I Ching.
Yes.
And they were fascinated. So open to it, because I said, this is not superstition. This is a way to stimulate your intuition. It's part of your classical Taoist tradition.
And
I took a position that was anti-superstition. Turns out, I got a book publishing deal. The largest publishing company in China is now going to publish my Western I Ching. This is just one example.
I know. Look at this cross-cultural interconnections we're doing. It's amazing. And this is not about competition. This is about, hey, we're planting seeds in each other's cultures.
Right. Right. And you gave us talk at that same conference entitled Seeking Well-Being Through a Mind-Body-Spirit Curriculum, which yeah. is basically what you do at Brighton.
That's it. Exactly.
And they love that so much that center, the House of I, outside of Beijing, has made major donations to the International Centers.
Yes, the Holistic Centers Network, HCN, which is a project of centersgathering.org. In how we're organized, it's nonprofit. And yeah, we received a grant from the House of I to continue our work, because our work is something that they are using as they develop their centers in China.
Right. And they've got a whole network of centers that they're developing. Like, you know, there's 25 that are affiliated with the House of I right now.
That's right.
In various different cities. It's just such an exciting development and really a hopeful sign in terms of cultural evolution.
Who knew?
Worldwide.
You know, many people here think of China as this very impoverished country, you know, with a singular dictatorship and not very interesting. That is not the China I found. You know, walking the Great Wall, you know, you think people walking around with little red books, Mao's little red book. They're walking around with cell phones, with iPhones and iPads, you know, and...
But what's amazing to me is how quickly, well, not really how quickly, the Communist Revolution was in 1949, but they are so materialistic now.
Yes.
I mean, they're incredibly capitalistic,
yes,
actually.
They are.
But what's interesting is how they're coming to the other side of that and realizing that materialism isn't going to make them happy ultimately.
So it's
coming around. And they're looking at this personal growth stuff as a kind of a luxury item in a way, mm-hmm. but it's actually taking hold. They're just fascinated by Western psychology and this holistic approach to health and well-being and happiness.
I had a conversation with Sean Fung and Mr. Liu about your talk and about some of the things that we were talking about at that conference. Mm-hmm. And what Mr. Liu said, he's a Tai Chi master.
Yeah. And he's a billionaire.
Well, that helps.
Yeah.
He has his deep relationship, deep roots with the central authority.
Right.
But he said that within the revolution, as they went to expunge the populace of these of this magical thinking and get it right down
right.
to what it's about for the revolution, one of the attenuating facts of that was that they did away with the soul of some of their practices.
Right.
You come along and say, no, this is about stimulating your intuition, about great decisions, perfect timing. That is possible for the human, for all of us, because we're humans and we have this,
right.
we have this sense of things that hasn't been entirely figured out through Western science or through, but you can get to it
right.
through these divination techniques.
Yeah, they were fascinated to hear a Westerner apply Western psychology to
exactly.
their classical spiritual system.
That is true. Mr. Liu had the same experience when he came to Esalen as a younger man, maybe 20-30 years ago.
That's what turned him on to this whole thing.
He was already doing Tai Chi, but he was doing it like paint by the numbers. He comes to Esalen, and it's like Tai Chi is this intuitive
right,
system
right.
of mind, body, soul.
So beautiful.
And he took that back to China, and now he's an acknowledged master.
The cross-fertilization that is being affected by the International Centers Network is phenomenal and laudatory, and I'm so glad we had a chance to talk about it. Unfortunately, we have run out of time today. There's so much more to talk about, but I want to thank you very much for being on the show. And I want to tell our listeners about your website, which is brightonbush.com.
Yeah, right.
Which is the central website for Brighton Bush, where you list all the retreats and all the events that are coming
yeah,
up, and tell
true.
People how they can go do a personal retreat or any number of workshops,
mm-hmm.
and it's a fascinating website, and you have a column that you write
yeah,
on the website. It's beautiful.
Yeah,
Peter,
thanks.
You're beautiful. Brighton Bush is beautiful. Thank God.
It didn't
it
burn.
Survived.
We had an atmospheric river of 7 inches of rain pour out of the sky when that fire got to within a mile of us.
Thank goodness.
It was amazing.
Thank you for being here. And for those who tuned in late, this is your Pathways host, Paul O'Brien, author of Great Decisions, Perfect Timing, a book that Peter mentioned, and a book that shares the theme of pathways, which is personal and cultural evolution. In a second, I'll tell you how you can rewind and replay this interview anytime you like via the internet or as a free podcast. Just search for Pathways or Paul O'Brien and you will find it. Today, we have been visiting with Peter Moore, Business Director of Brighton Bush Hot Springs Retreat and Conference Center. I want to say thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in to the Pathways program, which is broadcast and streamed worldwide via KBOO.fm, Sunday mornings at 8:30 a.m. USA Pacific Time. And podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com, spelled divination.com, as well as via iTunes and other free podcast servers. This is Paul O'Brien reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Radio and podcasts. And thanks again to Peter Moore and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways experience.